On this episode of Star Trek Universe, we are talking about Discovery 402 Anomaly, right after these words from our mystery sponsors.
Welcome to Star Trek Universe, the podcast where you get to listen in on the continuing Star Trek conversation that two lifelong friends have been having since they were 6 years old. My name's Matthew Carroll.
I'm David C. Robertson.
Buddy, how are you, man? How are you?
Tired.
Same. But you know what? I'm excited to talk about some Star Trek.
Yeah, are you?
One of the favorite parts of my week, man. Get to just Yeah, for sure.
That's nice.
Getting to watch Star Trek in general is always a pleasure. And I feel like 20 years, it felt like there was nothing on. And now it's just like every week we get new Star Trek.
Yeah.
Just so good. And this was a fun little episode. I felt like it was kind of a connecting the pieces episode, you know?
Yeah, I was not a huge fan of this episode. I saw it was directed by Oletande Osunsanmi, and that usually means quality. And then I watched it, and I was like, I'm bored.
I think they were trying to give it to a talented director for the purposes of like really landing those book moments, those emotional beats of book having, his emotional reaction. This is the episode that occurs directly after a book's planet has been lost and mm-hmm. he has to go into this anomaly. He decides to go into this anomaly and, against Burnham's wishes, but she kind of like lets him go with her blessing and with her guidance, sending Stamets with him.
Right. They pointed out like she didn't really have any control over what he was going to do anyway because she's not the captain of him. But
isn't she though? Like, doesn't he join? No. Didn't he join Starfleet last season?
He did not. No.
Okay. There's a whole thing where he was like talking about how he wanted to learn and be part of Starfleet last season. And I don't know what, I mean, I'm guessing he's not like a rook. I don't know if there's some sort of like, so like you're already the captain of a vessel. Can he like, this is a really bad joke, but can he join Starfleet as, you know, his entire planet now?
Oh,
sorry. That's a bad joke.
Do you mean could he join the Federation?
That is what I mean. What I was getting at was that, like, a Starfleet, if you're like in this form of Starfleet where it's just a collection of ships, you know, if you're like a captain of a ship and you want to like devote yourself to the ideals of the Federation and like join Starfleet, can you join as the captain of your ship that you own that you like are joining? Is that kind of what he wanted to do last season? I don't know.
I'm sure you could be some sort of honorary something, but I don't think that's what he's digging on because, you know, he was very quick to jump on that bandwagon of, you know, I don't need to do anything that you tell me to. I'm me.
Right.
I'm not your little organization.
Yeah.
I could appreciate Burnham having to find the balance between being Book's partner and being a captain and being concerned for him as a partner and knowing that he's the best person to fly the mission as a captain. Mm-hmm. That was all dope. That was all great. And I love Saru. I love his counsel. I love that he's like, perhaps this is the time for, you know, the partner to step in.
Right. Yeah, that was great. His guidance was incredibly important this episode. He's still being her mentor, even though he's her number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that, you know, this is clearly a Spock reference, but giving him the title of Mr. Saru on the bridge was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. And I'm curious to see what's going on with Tilly with, you know, going into therapy and whatnot.
It's a really real scene, you know?
Yeah.
Although I was sitting here thinking like, I don't know. There's a certain level of intimacy with a therapist that you want, that you don't want them to be your friend. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You want to set, I say intimacy, but I guess I mean separation, because you want to be able to be completely real and not let it affect your normal life. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I was sitting here thinking like, we've got like phone services now where people call therapists. Like, how do they not have like subspace therapy? You know, Why is she gonna, you know, get her friend to do therapy with her? That seems weird.
To give Culber something to do.
that's a good point. It's a good point. Culber is like the most active member of this, within the stories. He's almost always one of the most active members with the least to do.
Yeah, a little bit.
He's always like super involved in all these decisions and helping people. I mean, that's his role. His role is the guy. He's the counselor. But it's interesting.
I will say this. You know, I am. It is wearing on me a bit, the amount of cutesy, quirky awkwardness.
Right.
That people have on this show.
Yeah.
Like, Tilly was enough. Period. Tilly, all on her own, was enough. And then they bring in Adira, who is looking up to Tilly and also just as quirky and awkward. And then they have Gray, who I have decided is not a good actor.
Oh, yeah?
And I am just... It's enough with the delivery of, like, it feels like Danny Tanner talking to DJ at the end of Full House every time Gray talks to Adira. And it's just Gray, oh man,
Gray has a strange delivery. I have not considered it as bad acting up till now, but he has a very, I don't know, it's as if he's a like majestic creature instead of a character. You know what I mean? Like, he's not very real. It's as if he's, and this thing, he is not real. It's always made me think he's like a part of their psyche, of Adira's psyche, but like, he's not. It's, they're saying he is a separate being that somehow got like transferred to their body. And I don't know.
Yeah. That's a good way that you described it. Majestic, a majestic delivery. That's so, it's just ham-fisted and just so over the top that it feels like it's from like some sort of fairy tale or something.
Right.
Like,
it feels almost angelic, which is how he was introduced into the story, as this sort of like guiding figure for Adira that was like maybe real, maybe not. And now we know that he is real, and I don't think they've made that transition yet. And I'm wondering, once he gets a body, and we got a little, I felt like there was a little bit this episode where he felt a little more real when he started talking about his own desires. That little bit of conflict between the two of them, I guess, like, and I'm hoping that will make that their storyline a little more land a little better for me, is right now their storyline has basically been like, we are a unit and we are fully like, just this emotionally supportive unit. And since Gray has no ability to do anything other than what Adira wants to do, like, they just are, he's just a fully supportive unit within her mind. And now that he's going to have his own desires, like, they might pull in the different directions, you know?
Yeah. So, but so far it's just Adira being like, I don't feel, you know, I don't feel like I have good self-esteem and I don't know if I'm confident enough to do this. And then Gray going, well, DJ, I believe in you, you know, and the da 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 from Scrubs comes in, like, a lesson is learned. I'm just sick of it. I hope when Gray gets a body, he becomes a total dick, and we get like a real like shift in the acting, because I just I don't know if I can take this. This
yeah,
is bad.
I don't know how I feel about Gray. I haven't considered it bad acting, but I see where you're coming from. It's a weird delivery for sure.
Yeah, it is.
Strange choices are being made for, and it's also the lighting and the way that he's lit in this sort of like very like soft way, and I don't know. He's just very always. If he feels angelic all the time, and he always did, he's only there in the quiet moments too. That's part of the problem. Like, he's very rarely there when Adira is in the middle of like, you know, an action sequence or something.
It's like the furrowed brow, slight smile, constant shaking of your head every time you say a syllable. It's just like, oh, it's so bad.
To jump on your bandwagon a little bit. I'm not going to fully bandwagon with you, but just to jump on it a little bit.
Yeah, you can never just be in agreement with me, man. You just
I haven't had that negative opinion, so I don't like hearing a negative opinion and just being like, "Well, I'll agree. I'm fully with that." You know.
Okay, I understand that.
I don't want to be more negative than I feel. Uh-huh. But one thing this episode I found annoying for their relationship was how much Gray needed to communicate with the doctor, and so Adira had to pass that information back and forth and back and forth, and they tried to write it in a sort of clever way, or like a way that each phrase was a little different and each passing was a little different, but it got tedious. It got really tedious really fast.
Yeah.
So that's another issue here we're having with this. So yeah, I'm hoping this, what'd you think of the Picard call out?
It felt like a little much. I didn't care. Like, soon was enough. Like, it felt like it was pushing a little too hard for me. And, you know, that's a small quibble, but I still kind of went, okay.
Well, it is kind of a fixing of canon a little bit, because if in Picard, they basically learn to completely cheat death, why wouldn't everyone do that forever? Right?
Right.
So, like, at least in this situation, they did say that, like, it worked for Picard, but then after that, they tried it, and it was, like, really unsuccessful. So, that's kind of an interesting way of thinking about it. It's like, they're just trying to make sure, like, that's why death matters on Discovery.
Which also felt like a bit of a cop-out. Mm. But, like, why would it work for Picard?
Right.
You know, they should have done. They said, should have said, like, that it happened with Picard. And then they're like, well, how did it work with Picard? And Culber goes, it didn't. And you'd be like, what?
Yeah. That would be a, we've talked about this show making big swings before. That would be a big swing.
Like, oh, that'd be great, though.
Trapping the Picard series into having to do something different. It would. It really would. It would be like, what? And honestly, it would make all the Picard fans come watch this episode. Like, wait, what happened? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay. So the real meat of this episode is mostly about Book and his traversal of this anomaly and sort of his first chance to get to know Stamets on any kind of deeper level. What'd you think of their whole thing?
You know, I didn't know that there was a problem between those two in the first place. So in this episode, it just rang really hollow.
Mm.
I was like, wait, what happened that they were mad at each other? Oh, they're not mad at each other. It's just Stamets weird about not being able to save. Okay.
Well, it was making me realize something that happened last season, but I guess I'm so used to these shows sort of being like, last season, that's water under the bridge. Water under the bridge. Get it?
That's air out of an airlock.
Well, and the thing is, like, last season, she threw him out of an airlock, you know?
Yeah, I know.
That was tough. I remember that. Like, wasn't it like he had a chance to save his partner and she threw him out? Or no, it was Adira or something. I'm having a hard time remembering.
Well, no, there was a couple of seasons ago where she threw the robot lady out of the airlock.
No, don't you remember? There was an episode last season where Osira had the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the only, oh, that's what it was. She needed to protect him as the only one who could operate the spore drive, but he wanted to stay on the ship and protect his family. And she kicks him out of the ship anyway, you know, as captain. She shoots him out an airlock and makes him like kind of sidelines him when he wants to go protect his family. And that was a point of consternation during the season finale last season. It's interesting that that's like, there's this sort of line between Burnham and Stamets where they kind of have this big rift between them that was not resolved last season. And Book is clearly on the Burnham side of that line. And so this is sort of like seeing the two of them have that issue still was like, oh, That's kind of cool. It's kind of rare on Star Trek for those sorts of interpersonal problems to sort of persist in that way, at least.
Yeah, but you know, the book and its damage thing just fell flat for me for a while because I was just like, okay, are we doing this? I didn't even remember there was a thing between those two.
Right. And that therein lies the problem. Like, I'm sitting here going like, that's neat that they carried that over now that I remember it happened.
Yeah.
Like they haven't, at least I don't recall in the first episode, them cueing us in to remember that at all, or even showing it in the, you know, last time on or anything like that. Uh-huh. So, you know, you could do something like that to kind of give me a cue of like, oh, mm-hmm. this interpersonal rift is coming back.
Right.
I don't know. You don't have to hold my hand as the audience all the time, but it's been a year, especially the pandemic year, you know, it's been a while since we saw these characters.
Yeah, you don't have to hold my hand. Just guide me by the lower back every once in a while.
just caress the nape of my neck a little bit.
Oh. Just lumbar lead me a bit, you know? Just,
yeah. Oh, man. Oh, goodness. So, yeah. This is this episode.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know anything anymore. I'm glad to see Saru back.
Yeah, me too. Saru was wonderful this episode.
My wife was like, "How was the episode?" And I was like, "Eh." And she was like, "Oh." And she was like, "How was Doug Jones?" And I said, "Oh, the goat." And she was like, "Oh, okay." I'm always happy to see Doug Jones.
I think maybe I'm honing in to a problem that I have with Discovery, and it's that, like, it wants the characters to have this interpersonal conflict,
mm-hmm.
but it still wants the characters to be perfect Starfleet officers instead of human beings.
Mm.
So, like, people sort of vacillate between, like...
Ooh, vacillate. That's a big word for a pie-eyed drunk.
For a pie-eyed drunk. People, they tend to vacillate between, like, petty squabbles that are sort of quickly overcome and, like, big ideals that they live up to. Does that make sense? They're like, I'm going to give you the perfect speech you need as this officer, and then I'm going to turn around and tell you the exact thing that you would, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, then we're going to fight over something that matters less. That's why I do remember that conflict last season between Burnham and Stamets, because that was one of the few conflicts where I was like, ooh, that is a real conflict. That is mm-hmm. a real thing that she just did to him that is hurtful, but also understandable, you know?
Yeah. And it took me way too long to remember that it even happened.
Yeah, same.
It's like, I don't know, that should have been...
Well, he makes that joke, and that's what made me remember it. And that's... I don't think it was... They didn't hang enough of a hat on that. I hate to say it, because I hate to be like... Especially as a guy who does a podcast about this show. But it wasn't until he made the joke about the airlock that right. I was like... Oh, right, the whole airlock thing.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, is he really, like, doing some gallows humor about Arium? Like, she had to do that.
Oh, no.
That's what I was thinking, because I totally forgot about that for a minute. No. And then I was like, oh, wait, I think he did, yeah.
Yeah, she kicks him out an airlock.
But, yeah, for a minute, I was just like, holy shit, that got dark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you holding on to that for, Stamets?
Mm-hmm. Well, so I guess the mystery of it all, we got, you know, more, it's an anomaly than we didn't learn anything this episode, except that it seems to have changed direction. So does that mean it has a mind of its own?
We don't know. Yeah, it's 5 light years across. So it's huge. Mm-hmm. And also it can change direction, which means that it doesn't go by anything in astrophysics that Tilly's ever heard of, which means the writers, you know, have carte blanche to do whatever the hell they want without worrying about the quote unquote science of it.
Right. What makes me think, especially the way she brings it up, and I don't know if this is going to play in or if it's just the way it tracked in my brain, but she says, here it is before we showed up and here it is after. And then they say, we don't know anything that changes like that. And to me, it was like, but you introduced stimuli to a thing and it turned. Like a plant turns toward light, mm-hmm. right? Like, I wonder if there's I wonder if it was responding to discoveries, being near, if it turned, cause that was the thing, like, they thought they were at a safe distance, mm-hmm. and then suddenly these gravitational waves hit them, which was fun. Being stuck in the middle of the gravity was fun.
Yeah.
A little silly, but I liked it. I was down.
Yeah, it did look silly.
It definitely looked silly. But I kind of like the imagination of doing something a little different that we haven't seen.
Yeah, sure.
That's fun. So they thought they were at a safe distance, and then it apparently they were not after it changed direction. So I'm wondering if the thing saw them and turned toward them. You know what I mean? Like if that's a thing, yeah. that this anomaly does.
Yeah. Is that a giant eye?
Yeah, exactly.
It kind of looks like one.
Eye? I know. I said that when we were watching the trailer. I was like, what's that? Mm-hmm. What's this eye imagery they're using? And it's a black hole, I guess.
Yeah.
Or it's two black holes merging, they said. Or at least that's what that was their theory. But now we don't know. Yeah, that was their
theory. But
now it's like turning and changing direction. So still no clue what that is.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Oh, worst line in the episode, Stamets saying to Book, well, it did just, they were talking about how much debris was in this thing. And Stamets like, well, Stamets says, well, it did just go through a planetary system. And then he like catches himself like, oof, that's rough. Sorry, yeah. Sorry to bring that up, Book. You see all that debris, Book? That's your family.
Oh,
that's... It's not me, Stamets. Blame Stamets.
Yeah. I could have dealt without Book, like, getting caught up in, like, doing, like, some Doctor Who and, you know, looking at watching, like, Amy Pond run around in the TARDIS.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it seemed like, is, like, Book watching slow motion his nephew running around. Like, little children laughing noises.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, okay, let's get through this.
No.
It just seems so, I don't know, trite. I know I was supposed to be moved, but I wasn't.
I didn't feel that way. I don't know that I was moved, but I didn't think it was trite. I mean, the man just lost his planet. The man lost his everything, you know, his world is literally gone.
That he hadn't been to in so many years. Like,
well, yeah, but he just reconnected last season. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. He just saved them from Osira and then was like, welcome back into the family. The whole nature of that first scene in this season was him sitting with his family doing that ceremony. And then
right.
His brother says, you do it, Book. And it's like, he's welcomed back into their ceremonial rituals and stuff.
And, you know, and part of it, I hadn't considered it in the first episode, but now, and I was having a conversation about this with Stu Little a little bit, but, and I didn't agree with him when he said it, but now watching this episode, I think I do. I think they did not give me enough of Quajon for me to care.
Hmm.
I feel bad, minimally, but I don't feel like I really care.
When did season 3 air?
Like last year?
Was it last Maybe. Year or was it the year? Because I'm trying to remember when was the last time we actually saw these characters. Like how long is it? Because it feels the distance between season 3 feels long to me, and I don't know why.
The Hope Is You Part 2 from Season 3 aired in July of 2021.
July of 20... Oh, wow. No, then it's not been long at all.
Apparently.
Wow. Never mind, then.
Oh, sorry. No, sorry. It's January of 2021.
Okay, but still. So still, that's about normal length of a season. Okay, gotcha. I disagree that they didn't show enough of Quajon for me to care. I care about Quajon from the very beginning I love the idea of their people and their ability to be empathic with these animals and stuff. Like, that's just a fanciful, cool thing that, like, makes me really love their planet to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I really like the character Book. So I felt connected, and I definitely felt the loss for when he lost the planet. But I do kind of feel like we needed sort of maybe a little more reestablishing. I mean, they did try. They really did try. They really hit us over the head with it, with him getting to join in on that ceremony with his nephew.
Yeah, it just wasn't enough. Like, it was, I cared slightly more than I cared about Viridian 3 in Generations. Like,
okay. Right. Well, see, it's Viridian 4 you got to care about.
Uh-huh.
It's the population center.
This is City Alpha 5!
Oh, man. All right. Well, I guess that's... Oh, no, that's not all I have to say about this episode. Oh. I have one really hot take that I think would have made this episode immeasurably better.
What kind of hot take are we talking about? We talk about hot and wet.
Prepare those ears, buddy.
Slippery take.
Prepare those ears to receive this penetrative take.
I'm lathering it up.
Stamets should have been lying about the data. It would have made this episode so much better and more complicated. So they're inside the anomaly. Right, they're trying to send the data back. And the only risk is to Book and his ship. And Stamets is sort of this uncaring character who, like, is just all science, not really, like, touching base with the people. If he had in that moment been lying and actually the data had made it back, and then they had made it back to the ship only because Stamets had told him, like, no, the data only exists on this ship. Once we came untethered, we've not been able to send any data. It only lives here. The entire, you know, stakes of the universe are on your shoulders. You have to pilot this thing back. And then he pilots it back. And then it turns out that was Stamets saving his life from himself.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved that. That's what I thought was going on. And
I think they should have done that almost. Like, he should have lied. Book should have called him on it. And then basically shut the hollow down, and I think Book should have died. That would have, because I didn't expect it.
Right.
Like, that would have shocked me, and I like Book enough that it would have made me, like, I would think I would have felt Quajon's destruction more if Book died.
Sure, but I think the entire point of this is they're fridging Quajon, right? Like, Quajon is being destroyed to make Book's character interesting. And that's why, yes, I agree with you. I knew Book wasn't going to die this episode. There was no chance because, like, they have this huge plot point of his planet dying. Cause now he is, you mentioned Doctor Who a minute ago. Now he's the last of his kind. You know what I mean? Like, he's that guy that is always makes for an interesting character. It gives them a lot of pathos. And so, like, they've already built this character that I liked from the beginning, from the very first episode of season 3. And now I really, really like him. And now they've, I know they've spun a million things off of this show, but so we've talked a lot about, like, what's going to happen to Discovery next. Like, is it going to go back to the past? Is it going to stay in the future? You know, we don't know. I would be fine if they left. And then we got a Book show about whatever century this is. I could see it. I could totally see that ship being like a show of its own.
Yeah. Oh, the ship named itself.
Oh yeah.
The ship named itself Zora.
Yep.
Like from the short.
Yep. Yep.
That was cool.
That is correct. I thought we got that last season. Did we not get the name last season?
I mean, we knew the name from that,
the short. Yeah.
Yeah, the short, but
Odyssey
I can't remember if it happened last season.
Yeah. I thought that was just something that Saru didn't know because Saru had left.
So bad. I don't remember Discovery. I have such a hard time remembering what happened sometimes.
Yeah, I get it. Me too. And I hate that because I like Discovery. I'm frustrated with the structure of Discovery. I've talked about this before, but like the, mm-hmm. the way that it like is one big idea per season. And yeah. we have to wait on that one big idea. And if that one big idea fails, then the whole show seems to fail.
Yeah.
And like, I'm kind of already feeling that. We're in episode two and I'm like, all right, I feel like we just passed the second commercial break of a traditional Star Trek episode. Like, mm-hmm. oh, an anomaly destroyed a planet. Oh my gosh. Now we learned a thing about that anomaly. Now, you know, and it's because they're making it a character driven show and I'm here for that. I'm all for the, exploration of the format of Star Trek and trying new things, but I guess just the big ideas is one thing I really like about Star Trek. And like, they're not giving us big ideas within the bigger idea of the season. So like, this episode is just technobabble riding around in a, you know, there's no sci-fi concept that's novel here. It's just them riding around an anomaly, you know?
I think you're right. I think it is like, we would have, like, in Next Generation, they would have in the second act. This episode is the second act bit of them sitting around the table going, all right, well, we sent a probe in during the commercial break, and it turns out the thing's moving.
Yeah, and instead, we get this really cool scene where he is the probe, and he goes in and gets the information. But, like, the big idea is not, so this show, I think it's going to recalibrate because this show is not about the big idea.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately it tries to be, but it isn't. It's about, well, it's trying to be about the characters instead. And I come to Star Trek though, at least partially for the big ideas. I can't hate on the show for wanting to, instead of tell a story about an anomaly, it wants to tell the story about a man's grief. Like, that is infinitely more interesting. But I also would like an interesting anomaly story that also highlights something about the human experience, you know? Yeah.
No, I think I'm more interested in the anomaly. I get it. Everybody died. Yeah, everybody you know died. Okay, cool. Let's talk about this anomaly. What is it?
Space has no complexity next to a man's soul, Dave.
Yeah, but yeah, it can. If we force it to, it's up to the writers, you know. Yeah, especially if what you think you're talking about is true, and the anomaly looked at him like, we're talking about the soul of an anomaly here. Like, that's a lot cooler than a book's soul. Yeah. Book's just a guy. He talks to animals. He's basically Space Aquaman.
He's Space Dr. Doolittle. I'm not gonna stop thinking it was Dr. Doolittle now for the rest of...
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that we've ruined the book, the one thing we were both like pretty on board with in the season.
Look, just because we stumbled upon it and it turned out, you know, that he's a lame character, it doesn't mean that we ruined it. The writers, I think, ruined it. They made him Space Aquaman. How can we? I won't pretend that some of my apathy towards Discovery right now, it's a little bit because they took Prodigy away. I was really invested in Prodigy and really interested in enjoying the hell out of it, and then they just like stopped it and started playing Discovery, and I just haven't given a damn much. You know, I've tried. I'm trying, but I was getting emotionally invested in, I was already emotionally invested into Prodigy. And now they yanked it away, and I'm like, eh, okay.
Interesting.
I'm trying really hard to switch gears, but I haven't got there yet. But to quote Mr. Shatner, it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened. It hasn't happened yet. So,
Prodigy is definitely a fun show, and I really like it, but I do think I prefer this one, even though, yeah, I do. I think I prefer Discovery to Prodigy.
I mean, it's not a which one do I like more situation. I think it's just a they got me five episodes into Prodigy. I was invested, and now that's not happening yet.
That's true. Anymore. That reminds me of watching Buffy back in the day. I used to I watched a DVD for DVD. So like Buffy and Angel, season four of Buffy and the Angel show starts. And so like I started watching those. I didn't want to watch them episode for episode because it was just too annoying to pop the DVDs out, which is silly. So I'd watch one DVD and then I'd watch the next DVD and then I'd watch. So I'd alternate Buffy and Angel DVDs. And I remember every time I swapped DVDs, I would get annoyed.
Uh-huh.
It's like, but I'm really invested in this one. Now I got to go watch this other show. And then by the time I got done with that disc, I was always annoyed to swap back to the, you know, the previous one. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe you're getting a little bit of that DVD swap fatigue.
And then you're like, what was happening on this damn show? Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. I don't think I'm in nearly as dark a place with this show at the moment. I'm cool with it, I recognize Discovery has things I don't like as much as I like on other shows, but.
Yeah. I mean, last week was better. Last week was, okay, cool. And then this week it was just like, oh man, this is.
Well, last week it was a full story. That's part of it. Like, they introduced this idea. There was a problem on a space station and they had to go and stop it. And it was about, and you find out it was her Kobayashi Maru or whatever, you know, you like, or well, it was not her Kobayashi Maru, but it was like a test, that the, you know, president was giving her like that, that was an interesting episode. This one is him grieving, which is, you know, it is interesting, but like, there's no sort of arc, I feel like, to this episode. There's not like a beginning, middle, and an end. It's a middle. And that's not as satisfying inherently.
Yeah. That's all true.
Cool. Well, I guess that's about it for us guys, right? You got anything else you want to say about this episode?
Nah.
Oh, one thing I did like on the console of the ship. You know, they have that programmable matter that he's like touching with his hands and stuff. I guess there was a problem with one of the components down in the ship and it brought it up to them to work on it. Did you see that?
Oh.
Yeah, there's like a little.
I didn't notice that. That's neat.
It's like a battery or something. They're like, this is a needs work. And it's so it like literally comes out of the console as if the ship like brought it to them, which makes sense how he can pilot the thing by himself and do engineering and do whatever he needs to do when he can like do repairs on things. Thought that was kind of neat. I think that's what happened. At first I thought it was just like the ship was breaking because a piece of the console like just comes out and it's like something different. Mm-hmm. But I get, then Stamets does a little work on that one component so they can keep flying.
Nice.
So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, didn't notice it, but I'm glad you pointed it out to me.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. We're going to shuffle off.
Yeah, man.
Joel on true.
I'd say live long and prosper, but, you know, when I was growing up, I had, or for at least a couple of years, there was a kid in my class that I hated named Quajon. And maybe that's my real reason for not caring.
You're like, Quajon finally got his. Finally got his.
Little bastard used to run up behind me and hit me in the back of the head every day. Couldn't stand that piece of shit.
Well, live long and prosper, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Star Trek Universe Podcast, a Stranded Panda production. If you'd like to hear more from David C. Robertson, check out the DC On Screen podcast or maladjusted.tv for his web videos. If you'd like to hear more from Matthew Carroll, check out the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast or listen to his music. Just search for Matthew Carroll anywhere you get music.